You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor, at gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me once again James Turk. James has had a solid educational background, and after graduating from George Washington University, he worked at Chase Manhattan in various overseas locations. Somehow he escaped the fake fiat money world to dwell in a world of honest money when he went to work for a prominent precious metals trader in the Middle East. And through the years since then, he really has gained an understanding of how fiat money is used through an invisible but literal process of theft that takes money away from those who produce it. I like to say the people that produce real things that we need for our daily lives, the miners, the manufacturers, the farmers, the inventors, that money flows to an elite group of people who have influence on governments and are able to get laws and regulations passed in their favor, and it works to redistribute wealth to a relative few at the expense of the people who are actually creating it. And during the past couple of decades, James has devoted his life to help people understand the pernicious nature of fiat money and how they can protect themselves against the harm headed their way from it. And toward that end, he has written several books. One I know that he co-authored with John Rubino, who's on this show frequently, that's The Coming Collapse of the Dollar. The Collapse of the Dollar is another one. The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops. But the book we want to bring to your attention today is Money and Liberty in the Pursuit of Happiness and the Theory of Natural Money that James has written. And it's just gone to press recently, in the last few days, I believe, and you can pick it up at Amazon. Welcome, James, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Jay. It's always great to be with you.
It's good to have you, especially after this. This is, you put a lot into this book. It's very detailed. It has an awful lot of factual information, but I think very practical factual information, but also history, a lot of history that helps us understand. Most importantly, I think, is the need to understand the connection between money, honest money, and liberty, or the lack of honest money and the lack of liberty. And I don't think hardly anybody understands it. Before we get into that, I'd like to ask you just sort of a big picture question that Adam Taggart likes to ask each of his guests, and that is, given the way the world looks right now, what is your current assessment of the global economy and the financial markets?
I think we answered that one in the money bubble. We have a bubble. Fiat currency is the problem, and we have to get back to sound money. And we'll do it one way or the other. Governments will either do it voluntarily, or the market will force governments to go back to sound money. It's just a question of when it's going to happen, because the current system has gone pretty much as far as it can without too much more disruption.
Mm-hmm. And this disruption then can lead to, I suppose, chaos and a force of change in government that people will demand, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, it could have a societal impact. Look what happened in 2008, all of the problems that caused, the disruption it caused. And this time, it'll be worse because we have so much more debt today than we did back then. None of the problems that caused the 2008 crisis have been solved. They're still with us. And in fact, they've become much worse. And that's a real concern.
Well, in the introduction of your book, you quoted Henry Ford, who said, and I quote, "It is well enough that the people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning," end of quote. So what did Henry Ford understand about the banking system that he knew would make Americans really angry enough to revolt? If they understood it, what was it? What Henry Ford clearly understood this, but 99.9% of Americans, I would say, almost all Republicans in office, don't understand it, or if they do, they're just not paying attention to it. But what is that connection? That's what we want people to understand from your book: the connection between money and liberty.
When we talk about money, we ignore what money is all about. Money is about purchasing power, and for there are two types of purchasing power. There's the purchasing power we earn, and then there's what banks create, which is called phantom purchasing power. At least that's what I call it. And the best way to describe this is to just use an example. Let's say a office worker or a farmer or a nurse or a teacher works during the course of a year, earns $30,000 over that 12-month period of time. They now have $30,000 of earned purchasing power. But if the government goes to the central bank or a bank and says, you know, give me $1 million of purchasing power, the bank gives it to the government, there's no work involved, it's phantom purchasing power. It arises because it comes out of, as they like to say, thin air. It's basically just bank bookkeeping. And that's what Henry Ford was talking about. It's unfair to people who work to earn purchasing power to have their purchasing power debased by the new purchasing power that's brought into the brought in by the banking system. You know, several years ago, Ben Bernanke, who was Federal Reserve Chairman, said that he could increase the money supply by dropping dollars out of helicopters. Mm-hmm. But who wants to do that? Because you're not increasing the goods and services available. What you're doing is you're just increasing the amount of currency in circulation. And all that does is create inflation and rise prices. And what we're seeing today in inflation is a direct consequence of all of the money printing that went on last year because of the lag effect of having those dollars come into the economy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And yet you won't hear the Federal Reserve. In fact, they disavow the connection between that money they created for the programs that pump money into the system. So, I mean, that was my next question. Why do you think it is? I guess it's pretty obvious why it is. If you have a thief in the night, they're not interested in having the lights flash on when they're ready to rob your house. They're not interested in having people understand their dirty deeds, right? Is that why people are not allowed to know and understand this connection? My wife, Teresa, likes to say it's too complicated. And I keep saying it's not complicated. I think you just gave the example right there, James, that tells the story. But people don't really understand how money is created, do they?
They really don't. And they don't understand Jefferson's comment that banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies. Yes. But the reason why he said that is that, you know, as Mao Zedong said, political power comes out of the barrel of a gun. But government cannot create bullets out of thin air. So what they do is they go to the banking system and have the banking system create money out of thin air, which the government then borrows and uses it to buy bullets. So that's how the system works today, and it's not fair. That's what Henry Ford was talking about. And this is what the framers of the Constitution were against as well, which is why they put all of the monetary provisions in the Constitution to prevent the system that we have today.
Yeah, they did that. It was a certain amount of money, a certain amount of gold and silver, I guess, that was to be the dollar. The dollar was defined by that, as I understand it, right?
Yeah, the dollar was defined as a weight of silver back then. Mm-hmm. And the monetary provisions are that the federal government could coin money. It couldn't print money. It couldn't create a central bank that printed money. It could only coin money and regulate the value thereof. And regulate the value thereof meant that they could fix the gold-silver ratio so that neither metal was overvalued or undervalued, but was fairly valued according to the market, so that there was always sufficient metal on hand to have the metal needed to coin money. Those are the provisions of the Constitution. And the other one was, of course, that the states cannot no one can create bills of credit. But the irony here, Jay, is that we have dollar bills of credit in our pocket, but nobody really sees it as a dollar bill of credit. We just call them dollar bills, but that's what they are. They're unconstitutional.
And how did that happen?
Well, it's a long story.
That
part of that, I've traced that history in the book, not just in the United States, but going back to 1694 with the creation of the Bank of England in the United Kingdom. But the link to liberty comes directly from this, Jay, because one of the things I learned from, interestingly enough, is a speech given in 1948 by Howard Buffett, who is the father of Wall Street legend Warren Buffett.
Right.
And he made the point that in order to have liberty, citizens have to be in control of the government. If the government's in control of the citizens, you have tyranny. Mm-hmm. Now, in order for the citizens to be in control of the government, you basically need two things. You have to have the power of vote, but you also have to have gold as money. And the reason why you have to have gold as money is that it cannot be created out of thin air. And governments can't get the purchasing power unless they earn it, just like the farmer, the nurse, the teacher, and everybody else that goes out and earns a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that has changed, and it's explained in your book. But I think what about fractional reserve banking with and without a gold system? We had fractional reserve banking when we had a gold system, right? That is, and I don't know if you could explain fractional reserve banking for our people, because I think that's another concept that most people don't understand.
Well, it goes back to earned purchasing power and phantom purchasing power. Fractional reserve banking is solely a result of the bank accounting. They create money out of thin air. If there were no fractional reserves, the gold and silver that's deposited into a bank would be the circulating currency. Mm-hmm. But banks don't do that. They create more currency than there is gold and silver in reserve. And since 1971, there is no gold or silver in reserve, because it's now totally fiat currency, just based on whatever the bank and the government think it's worth. And they continue to debase it year after year after year by doing more and more printing and more borrowing.
Mm-hmm. But at least up until 1971, there was some constraint on the amount of dollars that could be created, because it was an international system, and in governments that would overindulge and spend too much, they would see their currencies start to decline in value, right, vis-a-vis the other currencies.
Yes, that's right. But it really started going downhill in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. It started picking up speed in the 1930s. When gold was confiscated in the United States by Franklin Roosevelt. Yeah. At the same time, gold was confiscated in Germany by Hitler, Russia by Lenin, and Italy by Mussolini. And the reason why they did it is they wanted to have control of the citizenry, so they took gold out of the hands of the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the liberty link, Jay.
Yeah, that's the liberty link. And also, as you say, Congressman Buffett said, if the people don't have control of the government has control of the people. But they need to have an honest monetary system. Otherwise, well, we're seeing what happens. It's unfolding before our eyes now. And James, I don't know if you could ever envision the time when we would have sort of a fascist system like we have now with corporate. I mean, my understanding of fascism, I don't know what your thoughts are, but it's the connection of government and large corporations that have undue influence and power on laws and regulations. It seems to me that our freedom of speech is being taken away in that way by individuals. But it all sort of goes back to money, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does go back to money. And the country today is very different from the country that I grew up in the late 1940s and 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot more liberty and freedom back then, because there was still some link to gold, as you said, which consisted and continued up until 1971. But, you know, that's been moving away. So I tend to say that the 1960s, when things are really started spinning out of control, we've now reached a stage where I think the system's going to be changed pretty quickly. And by that, I mean, you know, we're talking months, we're not talking decades, or months, maybe a couple of years, because it just cannot go on like this. You cannot continue to borrow and borrow and borrow and turn that government debt into currency and debase the currency. I think the fact that we're seeing all of these political movements and what's called populism around the country, people are starting to understand that the system's not working, but what we have to do is go back to the principles of the Constitution. The framers of the Constitution went through this actually with the War of Independence and the collapse of the Continental, which was the first currency of the country. They didn't want to have that happen again, so they put the monetary provisions in the Constitution, but the 20th century, we've ignored those monetary provisions, and we're suffering the consequences of bad money, just like the framers of the Constitution suffered the consequences of the Continental.
Yeah, it certainly has been the case. Let me ask you this, James. What are the characteristics of gold that lead it to become money chosen by the market when people are free to make that choice?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because gold is the only thing that's eternal. It doesn't decay. It doesn't rot. It doesn't disintegrate. You can't get rid of it, because it can't really be destroyed. And that makes it a perfect mechanism for measuring value over time and over space. So, you know, back in prehistory, Just like we learn to speak, we learn to interact with individuals. And from that interaction with individuals, we realized that we needed something that would serve as money to facilitate commerce. And gold and silver emerged from that.
Silver can be tarnished, I guess, but it's also very durable. But they also have both of those metals, especially gold. It locks in a lot of value, and the portability of it, it seems to be an attraction. I mean, you can have value in your house and other tangible things, but you can't cart it around if you need to barter or make a transaction, right?
Well, that's what silver basically, its role. It was a subsidiary coinage. Mm-hmm. The high-value transactions were in gold, and the low-value transactions were in silver. But remember, Jay, the technology is changing all of the time. And right now, you can leave the gold in the vault and use the internet in order to transfer gold from yourself to somebody else in any amount, because gold is perfectly divisible when it's stored in a vault. Recorded that way. The difference being, of course, when it's stored in a vault, you own it. When you store it in a bank, the bank owns it. There's a mm-hmm. big difference.
Big difference. Well, but that leads me, though, to recall a product that your company, the company you founded, Gold Money, had, but we were not allowed to use it anymore, at least in the United States. It was a wonderful product. I could buy gold, store it, and then sell the gold and load my debit card, and take it and use it to anything I wanted. It was a wonderful way of preserving my wealth, because dollars decline in value vis-a-vis gold over time. We know that's true. Where does that stand now with gold money? Is that still something that Europeans can use, for example?
It's available outside of the United States, but the banking cartel in the United States and the regulators at various levels of different governments have made it an impossible thing for all practical purposes to use. Mm-hmm. It's the same war that the cryptocurrency guys are now fighting against the government and regulation. These are new technologies that should be tried. The market should allow them to happen so that they can be tried and see if they're an improvement to the present system. You know, the bank payment system today has a lot of risks. It's very expensive. Open up the bank payment system to other techniques and other ideas in order to reduce costs and make commerce more efficient. And if we make commerce more efficient, that's a good thing, because commerce is what raises everyone's standards of living.
Well, it's a good thing, except for the thieves that don't like the lights coming on when they're breaking into your home at night. And it's a good thing for most everybody, except the people that are enjoying the benefits of their special connections with government, I guess. And that would be the bankers and the banking system, of course.
That's yes, that's right. And that's what Henry Ford was railing against when he said that thing years and years ago.
Henry Ford was glad that people didn't know, it seemed, from that statement.
Well, I guess it's hard to say what his real thinking was, because I never had the opportunity to talk about it, and I just read the quote. But there are a lot of people who have objected to the banking system. Another one, of course, would have been Charles Lindbergh's father, mm-hmm. who was a congressman who was also very much against the Federal Reserve. But I mean, the banks have, you know, again, going back to that euphemism I said about creating currency, creating purchasing power out of thin air to buy bullets. When you have that kind of system, government has the power to the detriment of individual liberty.
With just about a minute or so left here, what do you make of China and Russia running away from the dollar and building up their gold reserves en masse?
I think it's only a natural reaction. They're doing what each individual should be doing. I think they see the writing on the wall that the dollar's system that has existed since the end of the Second World War has been pushed to its limits by the federal government and the Federal Reserve, and that something different is going to be coming in the not-too-distant future. Gold's been money for 5,000 years, so they're just naturally responding to protect themselves by accumulating gold on the assumption that if it's been around for 5,000 years, that track record means it's not going to disappear anytime in the not-too-distant future. And as a consequence, gold will be around for a while and be used as money, which is a key point that I established in my book, Money and Liberty.
Money and Liberty, it can be purchased at Amazon. It's a great book, Money and Liberty, the subtitles In the Pursuit of Happiness and the Theory of Natural Money. It's a great book. James, I want to thank you so much for the efforts in putting this thing together. I mean, it's writing a book like this has got to be quite a lot of energy and time and effort, and I'm really glad you did it. I think you've sort of led the way in helping people understand the connection, and as we're both about the same age, and we've seen the changes that have taken place over the years, and we can definitely connect it with money. But more and more people need to understand it, and money and liberty is a great place to start. James, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Jay.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, we're going to have Tavi Costa, Kevin Smith, and Quentin Henning of Crescat Capitals with us. They will talk about their views on gold and the mining shares, as well as the markets in general. In particular, the focus will be on gold and gold mining shares, and Quentin will have some companies that he thinks can replicate Great Bear's success for its shareholders. We hope that you'll join us next week. If you're interested in the gold share markets, you don't want to miss what Quentin has to say. So that's it for this week. Until next week, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.